You know, we're so addicted to pleasure and we so resist pain. We're so addicted to self-confidence, high levels of self-esteem, regardless of how we get it. And, you know, we don't want to feel bad. We don't want to feel inadequate. We don't want to feel like, you know, I've lost my happy gene. You know, and as I pull back from my surface mind and the yoga and the breath, the relaxation leads me into my deeper mind, I begin to see that there's only so much control I have over my life.
Welcome to Guys Talking Yoga, a podcast created to help inspire men to consider the practice of yoga for its many benefits by sharing the stories and the paths of other guys. I'm your host, Derek Vandewalker, and today's guest is Ed Harold. Ed Harold wrote a tremendous book called Life with Breath. It's all about learning how to use breath as a tool and as a way to improve the quality of your moments and your life itself. In this conversation, Ed and I start out with his entry into yoga back in the 90s. You know, Ed, like a lot of guys, hit life midlife and struggled with a number of different things. And it was yoga really that helped him learn to connect with what was going on in his body, originally tightness and tension and the challenges of doing yoga, but learning how to work through his breath and his mind. And from there on, it took off. And Ed put together this phenomenal book and has amassed a tremendous amount of experience in the 20 plus years since then. And I just really enjoy connecting with Ed. He's got great energy and a great passion for this stuff. And I think you enjoy this discussion. We talk about the core, the mechanics of breathing, the diaphragm, intercostals, the psoas. And if anything, you come out of this with a curiosity of learning more about what Ed's tapped into on this stuff. So thanks for checking this out. I know you're going to enjoy it.
Well, I came to the yoga world a broken man. I was in a broken marriage. I was coming off a lot of injuries from competitive sports. My ego was out of control. I was super tight, flexibly. Everything was competitive to me, and I was crashing. And then the universe put me in a situation where I went to the Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health in Massachusetts to take a program called the Inner Quest Intensive. And wow. Like when I opened up the hood inside my mind, inside my body, you know, I began to see that, you know, there's a lot of missteps, but nothing that can't be forgiven. Everything is one breath at a time. And there's so many different ways to facilitate transitioning from where you've been to where you are to where you want to go. And I began to just see that, you know, a lot of my fears were unfounded. A lot of my insecurities weren't true. And I kind of recreated my mind. I recreated my perceptions. I recreated what I was going to put out in the universe for the rest of my life. And it all began with controlling the breath. And I've always been an energy junkie. I've always been a rambunctious young boy and, you know, hyper and always busy. And once I tapped into the breath, I was like, oh my God, I can be super dialed in and completely relaxed and calm, just like an animal in nature. Anytime I want to be.
Yep. So what brought you to Kripalu? Like, how did you know that that was the place you needed to go explore and get on this path?
The universe put a young lady in front of me who was a former professional bodybuilder, and her body became broken. And then she got involved in yoga to heal her life. And she sent me up there. And, you know, that feminine energy just really sent me into a whole new education, re-education of myself, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually.
Yeah. And when you first started doing yoga the very first time, how did you really start to make the connection between what you were feeling in your body, what you were noticing in your breath, in your mind, and connecting that to what the yoga mat and the class and that environment did for you?
Well, I realized almost immediately that I couldn't do it. And I was extremely tight. I could barely touch my knees. And I was like, oh my God, like you cannot do this. It's like, well, why can't I do this? And then as I began to explore, you know, the whys, I began to see that I was stuck in a pain body. Emotionally, I was stuck in a story where, you know, I was always the victim or I needed a victim. Then there was the accompanying thoughts that went along with these destructive emotions from my lower self. So for me, it was such a challenge because I couldn't do it. And things physically would always come pretty easy to me in my life. I was pretty gifted athletically. It wasn't that hard for me. It wasn't ever any really that great. But at the end of the day, yoga really kicked my ass and I was interested in why am I getting my ass kicked?
When you came out of that retreat, and I'm assuming it was like a 3-day retreat, it was a weekend thing. And this is an area I think where a lot of guys get stuck is like they go to that first class, maybe their wife or their girlfriend or somebody dragged them to that class. They got their ass kicked. They were humbled. Some of them don't come back because it sucked that much, but many stick around because there's something there. What did your practice look like after Kripalu? How did that weave into you and your curiosity in learning how to really utilize this tool, this inner agency, this sense of self that you were just totally taken by?
The great thing about yoga is you got to find the style that's right for you based on where you are, what your age is, how you think about yourself, what your intellect is, what's your emotional intelligence, what's your athletic skills. There's lots of different styles out there, and there's thousands of different teachers that present it in so many different ways. So I think it's important to sniff around a little bit and try on different things and see what's right for you. For me, initially, I started with Iyengar yoga, and that was really, really strict. And the teacher was like a drill sergeant. And I left those classes so deflated. I was worse than when I went in. I was like, wow, like this really might not be for me. Like, I really feel like a piece of shit and I'm worthless. So then I went up to Kripalu, and it was a little different style. You know, it wasn't really, you know, what you look like in the posture. It was like, how do you feel in the posture? It was done a little bit slower. So there was more of a therapeutic aspect where I could explore what I was pushing away, what I was clinging to, what I was open to, what I was closed to. It was always happening one breath at a time. It was very pranayam centered. So the pranayam was a big third of the three, the asana, the pranayama, and the meditation relaxation. So it gave me permission to come in with all of my limitations and then perceive them differently and then turn them into gifts.
So I think feeling is one thing that guys, when they think about yoga, it's stretching. It's something that they feel like they can't do. That's something for women, something that's outside of what they think they need. But they ultimately get there when they continue to work on their practice. But before we go back further down yoga, I want to hit your book. And so something that what hit me, which was, you know, this book here, it's a great length. It's easy to slip in a bag and take with you. It's easy to read on a plane. It's easy to just, you know, stretch out on the couch. So it's not a super, you know, heavy, big book, but it's certainly dense with a great amount of thought, of compassion, of generosity, and information around learning to utilize your breath for making your life better. And so tell us a little bit about how you evolved in your understanding and knowledge about the breath, and tell us how that eventually drove you or led you to putting together a book about the breath and wanting to share this in the practice with everyone.
The fact that we can control our breathing is a miracle from God. The fact that we have a dual switch that if I don't want to control my breath, I'm still going to stay alive. And if I want to control my breath, there's hundreds of thousands of different strategies, concepts, and techniques that I can use to improve my inner and outer performance. So it's a miracle that I don't know who created these things, but the fact that you can control your breath, you can control your life force, you can control your physiology while at the same time controlling your psychology. Who wouldn't want to get to know themselves a little bit better? So for me, initially, after my first teacher training, I took about 6 months off of doing asana. And I would get up in the morning and I would do an hour of pranayama instead. I wouldn't do any movement. Something in my head just said, don't do any movement.
And by the way, for folks listening, just give them a quick primer on pranayama if they're not looped in.
Prana is the energy that animates these physical bodies. It moves the molecules, cells, oxygen, minerals, and nutrients. It's a very, very small particle. It's just being measured by modern science, and we know that it's the driving force behind everything. So you want to raise your physical prana levels so your body vibrates at the highest levels possible with a resting heart rate, healthy blood pressure, and clear thoughts in your head. So prana is energy, and yama means you're controlling your energy. Pranayama. So there's a physical component, there's a mental component to it. So I created a pranayama practice for me, which was, you know, very centering, very grounding. Do some fire techniques, then do some alternate nostril breathing to bring it back down. Sit for a few minutes. But the most amazing part of not doing postures for 6 months is I did the breathing. When I went back to my yoga mat, 6 months later, I was inches more flexible and I didn't even do one posture. How did that happen? Well, the breath cleared the toxins from my soft tissue. It cleared mucus, phlegm, and fat from my joints, muscles, and bones. And the next time I went back, I was amazed that I haven't done postures for 6 months. And I was at a whole nother asana level practice, which really at first I could not believe. I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. Yeah. So it was freaky. I kind of backed my way in to a deeper practice.
Yep. So is it fair to say that in addition to the breath kind of cleaning out the waste and the toxins in our blood and our lymph nodes, just moving that all through, do you think your nervous system was kind of down-regulated in a way where your body wasn't resisting you as much when you actually were starting to do some of these asanas?
Without a doubt. It's about oxygenation. It's about circulation. It's about alkalinity. It's about removing impediments to free flow of oxygen, whether you're a muscle, bone, joint, or organ. Everything just was more congruent and more fluid. My sleep-wake cycle was much more efficient. I began to see that the stressors in my life were actually a gift, and they were actually trying to make me a better man. It wasn't that they were better than me. I was looking at it through the wrong end of the lens.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Let's hit that for a second. So, and again, part of the reasons why I started this podcast was like, there are guys out there somewhere in midlife who, you know, their careers have started to flatline. Maybe their careers came to a halting, screeching halt sooner than they thought it was. They're struggling maybe in their relationships with either their siblings or their parents or their significant other, their spouse, their partner, maybe their kids are, you know, they got challenges with their kids, and their bodies have changed quite a bit. You know, the ghosts of the injuries, the ghosts of their past are starting to kind of come up. You know, if you got laid out in a football game in high school and had a hip thing for a few days, that hip thing might just come back 20 years later as something that now is a bigger challenge. Same thing with the back and the knees, the feet, you name it. Now, not every guy is dealing with all these things at once, but they're dealing with probably one or two of these things somewhere after the age of 35. And that becomes a chunk of their existential experiences, like dealing with this and this and that as I'm trying to, you know, navigate the other, getting across the other side of the pond here in life. Mm-hmm. And you've been quite open in your book, and you obviously can tell in the energy, like you picked yourself off the mat with these discoveries, with yoga, with breathing, with figuring how to use the breath and the mind and the body to move through these challenges. But what is it about when we have these challenges, this suffering, whether it is job related, it is relationship related, or it is a physical thing? You know, why are those things actually blessings that actually can make you better if you learn how to, let's say, ride that wave and sort of surf it out, and by being in control of your momentum, and rather than being kind of tumbling inside that wave and getting beat up and thrown on the beach?
Yeah, what a great question. But I don't think there's ever been a time in humanity when that question needs to be asked. So, you know, we're so addicted to pleasure, and we so resist pain. We're so addicted to self-confidence, high levels of self-esteem, regardless of how we get it. And, you know, we don't want to feel bad. We don't want to feel inadequate. We don't want to feel like, you know, I've lost my happy gene. You know, and as I pull back from my surface mind and the yoga and the breath, the relaxation leads me into my deeper mind, I begin to see that there's only so much control I have over my life. And on some level, I've actually chosen to go through the experiences of my life. And I think if you have a third of your days that you would classify as great, and a third of your days that you would classify as, you know, man, it's raining, it's a really bad day, I don't even want to go out, and a third of your days are okay, you're probably on the right path. You know, if it's great all the time, you're probably not challenging yourself. If it's bad all the time, you're looking out, not looking in, because something's missing and your sensory perception coming out. So, you know, the breath is the key to get into the body. Don't like what you see in the outer world. It's a reflection of something that's going on in the inner world. It's just probably requiring a different perspective, different healing. So getting into that inner world, following your breath into this thoracic diaphragm, and just following that energy down into your gut, down into your low back, down into your pelvic bowl, like get in your body, feel all of it, and then stay neutral in your mind. But get present on that inhale, follow that thoracic diaphragm down, feel your spine come straight. Notice the attention level in the mind, and then work on your exhale. Okay. As a culture, men, we've forgotten how to exhale. So riding that exhale to completion is going to trigger a relaxation response. It's going to trigger a calming. It's going to trigger a gap in between the ticker tape of words and numbers and pictures you're watching in your head. So staying on that exhale is the key to another quality inhale.
Yeah. There's a, you mentioned just having that, creating that space in your book to learn how to react to that, those emotions, those thoughts. It's hard to get into this space physically. People can learn how to lengthen their inhale and lengthen their exhale for different reasons, right? Lengthening their inhale might help, you know, increase your heart rate and your energy a little bit. And then something that I do a lot at night when I'm trying to sleep or can't get to sleep or woke up trying to get back is doing kind of an easy, longer exhale. Mm-hmm. And I got to be honest, like, it works. It totally works. Now, if you've had a couple of glasses of wine and a shot of whiskey, like, you got other things going on in your body that's probably screwing up your sleep. But that lengthening the exhale does work. Before we go any further, can you just speak to a little bit, like, how does that simple technique, either with the lengthening of an inhale or lengthening of an exhale, what's really happening with the mind and the heart and the respiratory system when you're choosing to use that technique to actually have agency in what's going on with what you want to achieve?
So well said. You know, learning how to link breath with movement, whether it's physical movement, whether it's mental movement, getting into these flow states where something greater than yourself is moving you through your challenge, super important. If you look at how the body's made up, you know, a lot of guys were just upper chest breathers. We got the thing out, you know, we're all bad. And there's a place for that. Okay. But at the end of the day, God doesn't have any ribs here. So if you can take this thoracic diaphragm muscle, okay, which regulates the length, depth, the pace of your inhale, and you can just follow it into here where there's no ribs and just get a little expansion through these organs and get that downward pressure supporting low back function. So your digestion is always amplified. You massage your enteric nervous system where there's a boatload of serotonin and dopamine. So you feel good and you're calm about yourself. So getting that breath down to here where there's no restriction, super important to the heart rate and super important to your brainwave activity. Now, as this inhale evolves, you're going to have in a situation where these intercostals are going to collapse and your ribs are going to flare like gills. And you want these ribs to become elastic, so they're like rubber bands, because the lungs are great. There's two of them, but they're not muscle. They're tissue. So when the lung tissue presses up against steel beam ribs, hey, you're only going to have so much ingoing energy, and it takes a tremendous amount of energy for you to be you. So take advantage of the fact that getting that, training yourself to just get that inhale where the upper abdomen, the solar plexus, swell out into your fingers. You'll feel the floating ribs pull down on the stomach, spleen, liver, gallbladder, the energy centers of the upper solar plexus and abdomen, and then ride that inhale all the way up to rib one and rib two. So guys, getting that breath to go down into your body is going to change you almost overnight.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a lower heart rate. You're going to have a higher heart rate variability score. So there's spaces in between the heartbeat. What's that mean? That means there's going to be little gaps in your mind where you can pick and choose and pivot where you want to go mentally and emotionally, physically, spiritually. So getting that breath to go down into the belly and resist bringing the breath up into here.
Yep.
Why? Because the lungs are pretty smart. The lower part of the lungs are parasympathetic. They're oxygen rich. They're hemoglobin rich. They're calming, serotonin, nerve endings to promote digestion, elimination, fat burning, optimal circulation, optimal alkalinity. Now, the top of the lungs are different. They're kick-ass cortisol, adrenaline, sympathetic charge energy, big heat. You don't want that, okay? Unless you're being chased by a lion or you're going over the handlebars on the bike, you want to train yourself to first come into the moment cool and then rise the energy up so the fire that you have here is cooler. You're burning fat all day long, not storing fat, and you're being super efficient in the mental world. So you're choosing what's happening. It's not choosing you for how you should behave. That's just the inhale.
I love it. But first of all, before we go any further, I know you and I have spent a lot of time reading anatomy books and understanding what's what. And you know, I'm sure some people are aware of the diaphragm. They know it exists. Huh. But tell us, what is the diaphragm? Where is it? And what is its primary role and responsibility?
So once you start to create a relationship with your diaphragm, your whole life, physically, mentally, and emotionally, will change in just about a week. You will completely see everything different. So this is actually, people won't tell you, it's an organ. It has so many responsibilities to keep you alive, to self-regulate you, to keep the brainwave activity low so you're controlling the thought form. So you have this amazing diaphragm, and it's a horizontal-shaped muscle that separates the belly from the chest cage. It actually starts at lumbar 4-5, and it has these spindles that come up like a parachute that holds this unusually shaped muscle in place. Now, the lower part of the diaphragm actually connects to your psoas muscles, these two beautiful muscles that lift your legs up in patterns of movement that keep you grounded. Now, when you think about, if you breathe, if you're seated in a chair right now and you breathe through your mouth, you'll notice the air is going in and out through your upper chest and your upper torso weight is collapsing down onto your low back. Not great for posture, not great for brainwave activity, and you start to put weight on here. If you're seated in a chair and you begin to breathe slowly through your nose, the first thing you'll notice that you're creating enough suction and pressure for this muscle to vertically press down to support the spine and proper patterns of movement, connect you with your psoas muscles. And then it's going to massage the enteric nervous system, the solar plexus, which plays such a huge role in serotonin and dopamine in the fire of the belly. The air comes into the lower lobes of the lungs, which are right above the diaphragm. So as you begin to control the length, depth, and pace of your breathing, you're taking this muscle like it's in a gym. And not only are you making it stronger, like you're doing a rep, so it can press further down, but you're also giving it a stretch so it can press further down away from where it normally sits, separating the lungs from the upper abdomen.
Got it. So the diaphragm, most people will refer to it as a muscle, but to your point, you're saying this thing has such a responsibility. It is the the flux capacitor of your of everything that's happening inside you, that it's really almost like an organ. The diaphragm connects on your lower thoracic vertebral bodies, right? It connects into, probably through the connective tissue, into the psoas as well, or they are so close to each other, they're practically, you know, interwoven, but they're super close. It is just over the organs, but underneath the ribs. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And now, so you've got this diaphragm that, you know, for most people who aren't paying attention, is not descending and lengthening as much as it should, as you were sort of showing us. Like, the diaphragm is meant to, like, to drop all the way down. So when you think about your belly button or your beer gut, it's like going down, really, like it has the intention of getting to the bottom of your pelvis, like really trying to reach the bar stool. Like, it's trying to go way down there. But it doesn't always get there because either people aren't consciously thinking about it, or they're just so tight in their core, or so weak in their core, or so they don't have the ability to really, like us, you know, flexing a bicep. You know, we know how to pick up that dumbbell and curl it up. People haven't really figured out how to really learn how to lengthen the diaphragm, nor even strengthen the diaphragm. And so before we go any further with the diaphragm, before I even knew ribs could move, or before I knew about the intercostals, I realized that the ribs actually had a purpose to move. You know, if you're not breathing, you're not paying attention, your ribs are not moving. What are the intercostal muscles?
So there's two layers. There's the internal layer, which we don't see, and there's the external layer that you can feel if you work your fingers in between the ribs. So respiratory muscles are skeletal muscles. You're never going to see them in a mirror, but you can feel them kinesthetically contracting and relaxing. One of the great secrets of respiratory breathing or controlling the breath is that these muscles do not have the same fascia or soft tissue as the external layer. In other words, I can pinch my forearm and I feel that. But like the thoracic diaphragm and these internal intercostals, they don't have sensory nerves like what we have in the external body, because why would the creator do that? You know, you want sensory nerves to pick up your environment and make decisions according to the environment that you're in, fundamentally safe, unsafe. So the more that you practice these breathing exercises, what's actually happening here is that you're becoming more aware of the deeper layer of the body. The deeper you go into your body, the deeper you go into your hippocampus as an adult, and the deeper you go into your mind, your higher mind. So there's a level of attention there that is very different than someone who isn't paying attention to his breath. In other words, I can do whatever I want to do and still pay attention to my breath. In other words, I can go up and open this door over here, and I can still say to myself, well, I want to get up on an inhale, not an exhale, because the diaphragm's moving down on the inhale. It supports my legs. It's a one-piece takeaway. It's very smooth. I never want to get up on an exhale. And I'm just linking breath and movement and going to that door. But I'm doing it in a meditative way. You know, the mundane things in life are the gateway to the super great things in life. You know, we have a tendency to turn off when it's like I'm just doing the dishes, or I'm, you know, doing laundry. Everything counts. That's the great thing about life. And it all happens one breath at a time, Derek.
So you have these moments of really, as you say, being somewhat meditative and tuned in as you're making movement. As we were talking there, I was thinking about, listen, a lot of guys love playing golf. A lot of guys, you know, have great moments and not so great moments on the golf course. You know, when I look back on learning a golf swing, there's just so much crap to have to figure out and think about. And over time, people get better at hitting the golf ball more naturally, and they're not as, you know, worried about every single piece of alignment in the body. When standing up to the ball, really learning how to breathe and check in, like I think about that, the diaphragmatic breathing that you just walked us through, number one, gives you a chance to really learn to relax the nervous system. Two, doing a few diaphragmatic breaths is going to warm up your core and protect your back as you swing. And you're going to have a sense of really connecting. And, you know, I think to go back to what you shared about some of the geographical points of where the diaphragm connects, you know, I had a psoas injury years ago. I won't go into explain how it happened, but I basically yanked the upper attachment of the psoas, probably around T12, L1. You know, I didn't know what the psoas was then. I had this incredible spasm, you know, in my back. And it took me a long time to realize that that's where the injury was. Well, you know, in my recovery, I was very protective of my lower back because of a spondylolisthesis at L5-S1. I was very fearful of any movement. And over the years, I got very shut down with my back and my movement. And I think it totally screwed up my breathing. I mean, I was not familiar with the diaphragmatic breath, but anyone who's got lower back issues at L4, L5, chances are you're consciously or unconsciously protecting that space. You're afraid to even breathe back into it because you just think you're just going to put your bulging disc into your stenosis. And the reality is you got to find a way to work in there gently and get agency and get kind of strength and get tone. And I've realized in hindsight how much more anxious I was because my diaphragmatic breathing was limited because that diaphragm wasn't coming all the way down to the pelvis. My multifidi were sort of, you know, in a stone, you know, stone locked state, like a dead zone. Mm-hmm. And, other muscles had basically taken over. And so because I was in that compensatory pattern, my breathing really was stuck for a long time. And over the years, because of this work, because of doing yoga, because of slowly moving, working with the body, you know, you start to realize how to knit this stuff together. And I think when you're able to move the diaphragm, the ribs start to move a little more. And when your ribs start to move a little more, you're able to get into some of those back muscles, which you never thought you could ever, you know, engage.
Right.
And then there's kind of this unfolding, and you still have to be a little bit careful not to, you know, swing for the fences with your, you know, you're with your two iron on the course. You got to have some, you know, modesty and compassion for your body and your back. But man, all this stuff's it's totally accessible, and you don't have to be an expert on anatomy. You just have to pay attention to what's what and pay attention to the feel. And eventually you're going to get into a place where you're actually really starting to heal stuff and pull stuff together. And quite frankly, you're probably hitting much beautiful golf shots, you know, as well.
Yeah. The body is a self-healing mechanism. So, you know, wherever it's off, it's trying to repair itself and come back into balance. So, you know, when you're waiting in at the checkout line, that's yoga. You're in a physical posture that's describing your emotional and mental state about how you feel in this moment. When you're in the golf course and you want to create a routine, pre-shot routine, you know, you just want to always breathe through your nose because you're creating a parasympathetic response. You're relaxing the hands, feet, and face as much as you possibly can. You're coming up to that ball after some longer exhales. And what you want to do is, on the inhale, you're taking the club back, okay? Now you want to hold the breath as you come down. Don't let the energy out, because when you let the energy out through the exhale, you're losing power. As you strike the ball, then you begin your exhale, which will release the body and you'll have much more flexibility on the backswing. So when I'm working with golfers, we always inhale away and we hold in through the strike of the ball, because number one, okay, when I hold the breath, I'm at a lot more focused. Number two, I'm using skeletal muscles. There's a lot more control from the adductors coming up through my psoas. The diaphragm is being held down, so my lower and upper body are one, not two separate pieces. The golf swing itself is probably about 50 different yoga postures taking place in a second. So when you hold that breath in, you're not letting the power out. You're working with the skeletal muscles. Then as you strike the ball, then start your nostril exhale, and you'll get a much longer release, a much bigger back bend, and you'll hit the ball 10 or 15 yards further almost immediately at every club, just about every club.
That was a killer nugget, and the fact that holding your breath as you're hitting through the ball, you know, I'm so used to, I don't play as much golf as I used to, but I'm sure that breath was, I'm already exhaling before the club's even below my knees.
Right.
And you're thinking like you're swinging at a baseball. You're just going to put everything into it and just hit it. But, you know, that is so spot on for having the focus, you know, having the focus and being able to hold that. Also, at the same time, I think holding that breath, you're also not only engaging your core more, but you're also protecting your lower back as well. So you're not actually throwing that sucker out. So, man, that's a great nugget. As we sort of head towards a close, I do want to give some time for you to speak to Life with Breath. I want to hear a little bit on how'd you get the notion, how long it took you to write Life with Breath. How did you structure the book? So when people are checking out the book or looking to buy it, like what's in there that they're going to learn from and understand when they buy and they read Life with Breath?
Well, you know, I tried to tag as many of the bases as I could. I wanted to create a book where I basically everybody could play, regardless of your age, lifestyle, how you feel about yourself, where you are in the world. So something that was open to everyone. I wanted to provide a little bit about my background, how I was coming to this as a professional athlete and then owning yoga studios for 15, 20 years. I wanted to give you enough science that I didn't make you sick. You know, I just wanted to give you enough science, like, you know, this is something that I think is, you're really going to resonate with very, very quickly. Then I wanted to give folks a 30-day program where they could just start, you know, at the kindergarten level of breath control and learn how to slowly have an awareness around the breath, what happens when you breathe, different breathing strategies, maybe little different breath holds. Maybe breathing fast through your nose, maybe learning how to alternate nostril breathe so that you can focus and fall asleep at night and be more engaged in things in your life that are important, how to add targeted little mouth breathing techniques, and then also give you kind of a physical, mental, emotional, spiritual little bullet on each day that gives you something that's going on in your body in this particular technique, something that's going on in your brain in this particular technique, something that's going on in your emotional intelligence in this technique, and then also something that the spirit that's inside each of us is also there with us.
Yeah, it's great. And you've got a number of great quotes in there. You know, and I think it's not easy to come into the philosophical and sort of mystical aspects of a yoga. And not everyone wants to get in that stuff. What I appreciate, and I think what comes out of learning immense amount of agency and power and wisdom that you have in your body, it's just totally untapped. You know, it's like everyone talks about artificial intelligence. I'm like, dude, how about the original intelligence that's just sitting right within you? So I think your book creates opportunities for people to really like consider this philosophical drop that, you know, Ed's put in here, because you've got so much packed into this. And I think it's an opportunity for people to really hook on to ways of thinking about this stuff beyond just the mechanics and just being a tool that it's going to improve your day or your golf swing.
I totally appreciate that. You know, I look at it as, the breath is a tool so that, guys, you can get your story out before it's too late. You know, there's body, there's mind, and there's time. And yep, the relationship that you have with that is closely linked to how you're breathing. It's so important that you get your story told, as you go deep into the adventure that you can feel inside you that's calling you to continue to grow, to put away childish things, to just go for it. And, you know, the breath is going to show you something amazing. It's going to show you shortcuts where you can take in your mind, where you can take in your body, where you're not going to lose quality. Usually when you take shortcuts, there's a watering down of your original thought or your original intention. The breath is the only thing that has showed me shortcuts to get from point A to point B that I didn't lose any of the original quality of the intention that felt so good to me when it first came to me.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Ed, for those who are listening who want to find your book, who also want to know, what's the best way to find you?
You can get me at www.edharold.com. That's two R's in Harold. And I do private sessions. I work with teams. I have books. I have online trainings, 15-hour, 25-hour. I have a year in breathing program. It's a 12-month program that when you come out of that, your finest self will be present with you the whole way through. But at the end of the day, if I could just say to everybody, especially the guys, don't be so hard on yourself, man. It's not important. Hold yourself accountable. At the end of the day, be content, but never satisfied.
I love it. Thanks for joining us, man. I look forward to staying in touch. And everyone should go out and grab this book, because I think this is one of the short list of books to help you get into this stuff. I think Life with Breath is just it's awesome.
Derek, you're a great host, man. It was great to be with you. Thanks for all the questions and your awareness.